Let's welcome you now to the wonderful world of green. And now let's talk again about the battery, that thing that stores electrons. As we said a month or so ago when the young CEO of an award-winning battery company, Cynode, was here, and here's the quote, "If we could just get batteries to hold more electrons in a lighter weight package that could be recharged quickly and easily, it would revolutionize everything from cell phones to electric cars to how we use appliances in our homes and how industry operates." The potential, I think, is beyond calculation. So let's talk about this in a little bit more detail. Last year, a team at Argonne National Labs here in Chicagoland won a competition for $120 million to set up a battery energy storage hub, the Joint Center for Energy Storage Research, it's called. It's got a mandate, and it is to develop revolutionary energy storage technologies with five times the energy density of today's systems at one-fifth the cost, and to do that in 5 years. As with Cynode, Chicago's marvelous Clean Energy Trust played a role here, too. George Crabtree runs the place. You're not looking for baby step improvements here. You want some kind of a big deal breakthrough.
We're looking for a transformational change, Bill, and that's the reason we chose our 555 slogan. So if you think about what's needed to make your car, an electric car, deployable and popular, it's got to go about five times as far. And that means you need five times the energy density. For the grid, if you're going to store electricity from wind and solar, which is, of course, variable generation, you don't know really, you can't control it, don't know when it's going to blow hard or shine brightly, you need to bring the cost down. So these are our two goals.
And this hopefully will be a scalable thing, a thing that can go into a cell phone to an enormous building-sized thing that can store this energy from windmills, turbines, and solar panels.
So absolutely. You can think of a car that gives you a sense of the size that you need, the size of an engine, let's say, to make the car work. But you can have much bigger batteries, too. So in your house, you could have a battery in your basement. You could buy electricity at night when it's cheap, use it during the day when it's expensive. You could apply that model to a commercial building, to a community, to a neighborhood.
In a way, George, it's sort of the model we used to have when we used to store the coal in the basement.
That's really not...
Or the heating oil.
Yes, very similar, but this time it's electrons, and that's really the fuel of the future.
So the clock is ticking. How far are you in on this five-year time frame?
Very interesting question. So we did a calculation last week and realized that 11% of the 5 years is gone.
You scientists, yes. Precision.
Yes, and we use that to motivate our troops, of course. You've got to get going. But we have research going. We have, I think, four papers published in the literature, including one which describes a new lithium sulfur battery, which is already better than what's out there commercially. But we're looking to make research breakthroughs. So part of our legacy is to bring up the fundamental knowledge about battery phenomena and materials. How do they work at the atomic and molecular level? And we'll be using that knowledge to build the batteries that we have in five years.
What is the process, the method here? Are you trying to build something from scratch? Are you trying to improve upon existing technology or a little of everything?
So we're trying to go beyond the present technology. The present technology is lithium ion, which very interestingly was discovered at University of Texas. John Goodenough was the father of that in 1971. But not commercialized until 1991, and that happened in Japan. Sony did that. For the last 20 years, lithium-ion has been the battery of choice, the industry standard. It's a marvelous battery. It can't be transformational. It's just about gotten to its limit. You might make it a factor of two better, but not more than that.
There are people working on that anyway, right?
Absolutely. Most of the community is working on lithium-ion because the incremental improvements are really worth money. But we need to be more visionary. We need to look beyond lithium-ion. A factor of five you won't get from lithium-ion.
Yeah. All right, 11% in on this five-year period when you have a self-imposed deadline. Do you have any idea about any aspect of what this new generation battery will look like?
So absolutely. We have three new proposals to follow up. All of them are beyond lithium-ion. All of them are capable of meeting the 555. So one of them, for example, lithium, as it happens, I'll get a little technical here, but just for a minute, has one charge. It goes back and forth between the anode and the cathode of the battery and stores energy and releases it as it does so. Why not use something with two charges or three charges, like magnesium or aluminum, and immediately double or triple the energy density? So this is one of the
ideas.
It's
theoretical, though, right now.
Well, no, there are people working on it. And in fact...
Have they made it happen?
there's some model systems out there. They're not at commercial scale, and they don't yet meet the 555 goal, but there's promise there. The thing that we need to do is understand how they work at the scientific level and at the atomic and molecular level much better than we do now. And that's the thing that Jay Seizer will bring to the table. We'll apply that fundamental understanding to make the battery work better. We have a phrase, we'll build the battery from the bottom up. Mm-hmm. So we're going to take the atoms and molecules that we now understand how they work and put them together in the way to give us the best battery we can get.
George Crabtree, do you ever talk about this, and maybe it's a dangerous thing to talk about, but the possibility that you won't make it, that the battery will only be 3 times and not 5 times more efficient, for example?
So there's no reason why it can't be much more than 5 times as efficient.
If all right, there's a positive twist on it. I like
well,
that.
If you take the back of an envelope that scientists like to do and a pencil and ask yourself, what is the best that the battery could ever do? Everyone agrees it's a factor of 10. So that's well beyond the factor of 5 that we're shooting for.
So explain that again. It would be a battery that would what? What is? Give me the 10.
Well,
hold 10 times more than today.
It would hold
10 times as light.
Yes, it would hold 10 times more energy in the same space and at the same weight than today's lithium-ion batteries. And that's a calculation that everyone agrees on. So that factor of 10, we're shooting for half of that, a factor of 5. And that is typically what mature energy technologies do. They give you half the theoretical potential. So although a factor of 5 is aspirational, it's aggressive, it's a stretch goal, it's well within reason that we could do that. What do you need to get there? You need to make discoveries. You need to understand how materials work, how they store energy, what the phenomena are in ways that we don't understand now. So the thing the battery community typically does, it says, I want to make the battery better. I need a better cathode, let's say. I'll try this. If it works, I'll use it. If it doesn't work, I'll throw it away. I will never understand why it failed or why it works. And that's what Jay Seizer brings to the table. We want to understand why it fails.
So give me the acronym again, Jay.
Jay Seizer. So it's Joint Center for Energy Storage Research.
George, are you looking at supercapacitors? I've heard there is promise there, too.
There's promise there. Actually, the field is so big that we have to limit ourselves. So although supercapacitors look interesting, we have not targeted them within Jay Seizer. So we're looking strictly at battery technology. And supercapacitors will be done by others.
And are being worked on by others.
Right.
From your experience, and you've been in this field of science for a long time, do you feel in your bones that this is going to happen?
Oh, I do. So I think there are several things that make this the time is ripe for this. One is nanoscience. We've had over 10 years, I think it was 2001 when President Clinton made nanoscience a national initiative, and it's made tremendous strides in those 10 years.
And this means molecular level of
It means looking at things, yes, at the atomic and molecular level. So we've developed techniques for observing what happens at that level and even for controlling what happens at that level. And we can apply that to the battery field, which we have not applied it to before. The battery community doesn't do that. Second thing is computers. So computers get better. We're now at the petaflop stage. That means
beyond terabyte, beyond... Well,
yeah, 10 years ago we were at teraflop. Now we're at petaflop. And 10 years from now we'll be at exaflop. Factor of 1,000 in each case. And that means computers are getting better faster than you can ever imagine.
And these are key tools in helping you analyze them.
And this is a key tool that Jay Seizer will apply. So we'll use computers to, for example, simulate materials that have not been made yet. And we'll filter them on the computer and make only the ones that have the most promise.
Well, George Crabtree, I'm very excited. You're the man at Argonne to do this. And again, it's the Jay Seizer. The acronym for the hub that's actually doing that. The hub means what? You're bringing everything together into the one area?
Yes, and we'll be the central place for developing this kind of technology.
Well, we're going to be looking at the headlines and hoping and knowing that something will happen, and we'll have you back when it's breakthrough time and you'll be in a tuxedo and on the speaking circuit talking about how it all happened.
I'm looking forward to that, Bill. Thank you.